Hello, plantpreneurs, and welcome to Series 4 of the Plant-Based Business Podcast, brought to you by the team at Vevolution. I'm Eric Amundsen, your co-host and co-founder at Vevolution.
And I'm Damien Clarkson. You will know me from previous seasons if you listened. I'm also going to be co-hosting the occasional episode in Season 4. I'm excited to welcome Eric to the podcast as we expand Vevolution and our reach to listeners around the world.
Over the last year, Vevolution has built the world's leading plant-based and cell ag network and investment marketplace. On the show each week, we explore what it takes to create and scale a plant-based business. We'll interview the best entrepreneurs and investors who are building solutions for a better and kinder world.
Thanks for joining us. Tune in each week to be inspired by entrepreneurial stories, tips for fundraising for your business, state-of-the-industry insights from leading investors, and success stories from Vevolution's new investment marketplace.
Hey everyone, Eric here. Did you know that there's 1.3 billion tons of waste generated each year by the food industry globally? The Plant-Based Business Podcast is created with support from Hura, Europe's fastest-growing plant-based meat company. Rooted in activism and the desire to drive positive change, the company's credentialed R&D team, the Tech Rebels, is spearheading a new food frontier that prioritizes sustainability. Going beyond what's been technologically possible to date, Hura's new approach uses nutrient-dense materials from industry, byproduct, and non-utilized plant sources. So imagine, instead of just focusing on proteins from a legume seed, Hura is finding ways to leverage the functionality of whole plants in their naturally occurring structures. Over the past year, Hura has quadrupled the size of its expert R&D team and will launch up to 10 new products this year. Follow Hura Foods, that's H-E-U-R-A, on LinkedIn to see how it's tackling the big, unsolved global food challenges using low carbon footprint technologies. Now back to the show. Eric Amundsen here, and today I'm joined by Tim Samuels, founder and CEO of the well-being startup Karmacist. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. Hello, Denver from London.
How's London?
London's actually, I've seen some blue sky today, which is probably a first. Being British, I've instantly defaulted to talking about the weather. I apologize.
Well, it's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
Can you tell us about Karmacist? And what problem that you were solving?
I feel like I'm pitching already.
Yeah, we're going to get right into it.
So Karmacist is it's an intriguing brand, which is essentially botanical supplements to address some of the kind of the modern sort of stresses and demands of life. So we have pills for mood, relax, immunity, and energy. And I guess the underlying ethos is that there's an awful lot of wisdom in nature. We have co-evolved with plants since we started strutting around this earth 200,000 or 2 million years ago, depending which type of Homo we're going for, erectus or sapiens. And we've co-evolved with plants. They're incredibly powerful. You know, as much as half of our pharmaceuticals come from plants. You know, they've been healing us for the best part of probably 16,000 years across different cultures. What we wanted to do, though, was bring a bit more scientific precision to select which of these plants can really help us. And to do that, we have brought on board some brilliant scientists from Harvard and Stanford. Dr. Uma, who's a nutritional psychiatrist at Harvard, and Professor Vittorio, who is an epigeneticist at Stanford. And they've been using their modern scientific know-how, their research, harnessing this kind of breakthrough form of science called nutrigenomics, which I can explain in a moment, to pinpoint which are the precise botanicals that you want to get the benefits, to kind of just give you that leg up and that support in our daily lives. So it's taking this kind of ancient wisdom, marrying it with this cutting-edge science and evidence-led Ivy League know-how to produce some really charming supplements.
Fascinating. So you know, we'll get into, I think, the scientific discussion in a second. You have a really interesting background, I'd say. Were you always destined to be an entrepreneur? And, you know, you have this unique background prior to this being an award-winning BBC and Nat Geo documentary maker. How did this all happen?
Yeah, I was least destined to become an entrepreneur and still can't quite understand how I've ended up here. I mean, it's been a fascinating journey. From a very young age, straight after university, joined the BBC, became a reporter. I was a TV correspondent on a show called Newsnight, which is probably like the 60 Minutes of the US. In the UK, made documentaries around current affairs. I did a lot of work sort of championing social injustice, trying to get people off death row, trying to expose racism, working undercover, forming the world's oldest rock group to highlight the treatments of the elderly and elderly isolation. And along the way, did quite a lot as well on mental health. And, you know, a big thing for me has been trying to break down, particularly for men, the stigma of talking about mental health. So did quite a lot of programming on that. Wrote a book, Who Stole My Spear, or Future Man in the US, to try and bring a bit more candor to the male experience. So always had a bit of an interest in well-being and what's good for us, you know, what particularly gives us a bit more mental resilience, and was always road testing things like yoga and meditation. Couldn't walk past Whole Foods without being drawn in and leaving a pauper, and launched a BBC podcast called All Hail Kale to try and cut through some of the wellness trends, be a bit more discerning about the stuff that's out there and bring a bit more rigor to it. And during the course of meeting these amazing experts, came across nutrigenomics and the scientists. And at that point, sort of thought, something in this. You know, my natural cynicism has been vanquished. And thought, let's launch it. Let's bring this to the masses. Let's get it out there. Having no idea what the entrepreneurial journey would be and just how damn hard capitalism was. We know when you spent your life doing public service broadcasting for BBC, and then latterly, you know, I was a correspondent for National Geographic TV, predominantly based out of the States. You just don't know what business entails. You have no idea. You have this kind of idealistic sense of, oh, I'll come up with something good and people just buy it,
right?
Which are probably is about as naive as someone in business thinking, oh, I've got an idea for TV, that'll work. What you don't know, you don't know. And boy, it's been a learning curve. But yeah, fascinating.
But is there almost an advantage of like starting from that, you know, naiveness? You know what I mean? Just like, oh, I could create this and someone will buy it, right?
I suppose had I known what was coming down the, as you say, pike, I might have just thought, I don't know.
I know what you mean.
If I don't know what fundraising entailed or B2C marketing or logistics and trying to come up with packaging that was 100% recyclable, and in our case everything made in the UK, like the sheer logistics are overwhelming. I liken it to being thrown into an Olympic decathlon, and you know naturally how to do maybe two events really well and a couple more you can kind of pick up. Mm-hmm. And you look at other people and think, well, they're doing that, so I'll do this. And there are some you just think, I have no idea how to do this. But you're doing every race and you're doing it all on your own at the beginning. But you've just got to get that. You've got to qualify. You know, previously you were just doing one or two events, and all of a sudden you're doing 10 events. And if you don't do them all, the business fails or it doesn't fund. So I have enormous respect for people who've started businesses now that I never even really crossed my mind before.
Entrepreneurship is sort of, someone once told me, and I don't know if this is the exact quote, but entrepreneurship is sort of like delicately dancing through daily disaster.
Yes. And all of a sudden the music changes and it's a different dance. And it's like, oh, I've got to go from tango to foxtrot. And then I'm now break dancing and I don't know how to waltz, but I'm still having to just do it. And then layer on top of that COVID, and you're dancing slightly insanely on your own in your own house.
So you found these renowned scientists, somehow convinced them to work with you. What does the audience need to know about your team and the basics of nutrigenomics?
I guess because I wasn't always on a mission to do this. And, you know, I've been, I guess, on the record as being a bit quite skeptical about a lot of supplements, and the industry doesn't have a shining past.
What do you mean by on the record?
I've done podcasts on whether we need vitamins and supplements, and drew attention to the mafia-like cartel practices of some of the big companies in the 90s, and even brought on an ex-mafioso to deconstruct their business models and say how impressed he was at the racket they were running. Wow. So, you know, I come from this with a healthy dose of cynicism, but I've always been open to, you know, non-traditional alternative treatments and natural treatments, shall we say. So it was the caliber of the scientists and what they're up to that drew me in. You know, I wasn't looking for any old Tom, Dick, and Harry. I wasn't just kind of desperate to get into this game. It was them and the breakthroughs which sort of overcame my natural doubts. And they're brilliant. You know, Dr. Uma Naidu is the pioneering nutritional psychiatrist in the US, and she's at Harvard Medical School. And her ethos and research shows that there's an awful lot of mental health benefits you can get through having the right nutrients and diet. And conversely, there's an awful lot that isn't good for your head. So, you know, she's found things like having blueberries can help process trauma. Saffron, which is a hero ingredient in our mood formulation, has shown to have really impressive mood enhancing benefits. And there are clinical trials that show that saffron can be as effective for mild to moderate depression as pharmaceutical antidepressants. Conversely, things like salami is a substance which can actually exacerbate depressions. Again, you know, I'm sure your audience are feeling nicely smug at this point, and rightly so. And she's paired up with Professor Vittorio Sebastiano, who's an epigeneticist at Stanford, with a particular speciality into aging. And what's really interesting is this kind of sweet spot that we have around nutrigenomics. So I use my high school grade science education to try and illuminate this. But essentially, we thought that we were doomed by our parents' genes, and what you inherit is going to determine whether you get certain characteristics and health outcomes, and there's not much you can do about it. So, you know, you look at your parents or grandparents, think, oh, they've all died of that, I'm doomed, or that's their personality, oh, that's me. When in fact, the reality is that, you know, our understanding is that a lot of it comes down to gene expression and whether certain genes are sort of loosely switched on or off. So you might have a predisposition to, say, diabetes, but if you live a certain way, you can go a long way to mitigating whether you're going to get it or not. A lot of genes, gene expression, comes down to your lifestyle. As much of it, 70% is lifestyle driven. So positively, things like exercise, meditation, avoiding stress, avoiding pollution, all, you know, we know kind of have this kind of epigenetic effect. And what nutrigenomics looks at is how certain nutrients can help regulate certain genes, which I think is fascinating. The idea that through the kind of the very natural things you can eat and take in, you can then have this kind of very deep down impact on the kind of fundamental level. So going back to saffron, we, you know, it's been used for millennia, you know, particularly from the sort of Persian Near East world. The studies show it can have this kind of antidepressive effect in some people. Take it down deeper, and you can see that some of the components in saffron help regulate the genes involved with the transportation of serotonin, the chemical, the happy hormone. So nutrigenomics is really about sort of going right down to that sort of deeper level and seeing how particular nutrients can impact particular genes or teams of genes that are involved with regulating certain mental and physical function. And we are harnessing this sort of nutrigenomics research, sort of uniquely so, through this pairing of a sort of nutritional psychiatrist and an epigeneticist. And that's what makes it really interesting.
So as you were you know, getting more into the product development, you know, can you tell us why that you focused on these, this quadrant of mood, immunity, energy, and relaxation?
Yeah. I mean, it's what I need, frankly. I just have to make products that are,
sounds wonderful.
that are good for my miserable, anxious, lackluster, COVID paranoid self. I guess my journey, to sound all a bit American, certainly the last couple of decades has been around finding things that are good for your mental health. You know, I've written about it a lot, and it comes from a sort of a first person experience. You know, I am and have been prone over the years to bouts of depression or elements of anxiety, and it's not fun, and you're always looking for solutions. And you know, some might come from traditional pharmacology and, you know, what the doctor would or shrink would give to people. But I've always been interested in, like, how can you almost take the best of East and West. I know that's not quite the right way of saying it, but you know, so for me it's always like, well, what's modern medicine got, but what can I learn from yoga or meditation or breathing exercises? So I've always been open to trying and trying to find different things. And so I guess there's a sort of a personal element to that. But also there's an incredible need. You know, we are pre-pandemic living through something of a mental health crisis. Post-pandemic, boy, has that got worse. You know, we have... You know, I barely know anyone who's not been touched by some degree of depression, stress, anxiety, and particularly kind of younger generations coming up. It's rampant. So, you know, I'm very motivated to try and explore anything which will give people a bit more resilience. You know, likewise, immunity felt incredibly topical. And who doesn't need energy? You know, when you get over a certain age, you'll take anything to stop you falling asleep in the afternoon or get your ass out of bed in the morning.
So you have this understanding of the science. You've surrounded yourself by the right people. You started to figure out what you want to put together. Not to mention wellness being, you know, a trillion, 4 trillion global industry.
Yes, which we now have about 90% of, I'm pleased to report. As I speak to you from my yacht,
everyone listening should just see his yacht.
Listen, you think the oligarch's yachts are big? You should see what I'm on now.
He has a studio. There's a party behind him, but he's got great headphones, so you can't hear it.
Yeah,
yeah.
The video feed shows you my pokey one bedroom flat.
So you have this opportunity, and everything is starting to put together. So what has it been like to actually build the business? What was step one, step two, step three, right? You have some of the right people. You certainly don't have, you know, extensive experience running a wellness brand. So what were some of the first steps into creating the product?
I suppose I approach it sort of journalistically. You interrogate the steps and think, who do I need to speak to? Who do I need to work with? And, you know, fortunately, Calmus has become, we were housed or incubated by a VC startup incubator called Founders Factory, which is, you know, sort of one of the biggest in Europe. And they've got lots of D2C experience and people around them. And it's a bit like being on a sort of campus where there are lots of people who you can call on, you know, around growth and design and all that sort of stuff. So that was a really important support mechanism. Yeah, that was important, but just sort of finding, like, you want to keep as lean as possible, but what are the absolute, who and what are the absolute tasks and people that you need around you? Some of it, as I said, you model through yourself, but, you know, having a really good web developer has been crucial. And it takes iterations to find the right person that can make Shopify look beautiful. Having a really good design agency who you can work with, because, you know, you want to make the brand look, you know, as beautiful as possible. And, you know, as much as it's, you know, we believe in the efficacy, it has to be aspirational lifestyle. So we actually ended up hooking up with a visual artist in Australia doing computer generated art with a kind of botanical genetic feel to kind of really give our products a kind of luxurious look and stand out. I've become a kind of a global expert overnight in packaging, things I never thought, you know, we wanted to be 100% recyclable. to minimize our footprints. Everything is made in the UK. So you're literally kind of like sourcing glass or cardboard and going up to see kind of glass sprayers and finding yourself doing things you never imagine that you would do. I suppose for me, and you can sort of muddle through this stuff and quite quickly learn and talk to people and shortcut some of that stuff. The bit I found most challenging is I don't have an entrepreneurial business background. You know, my brain is, I guess, creative, words, pictures, video, audio, storytelling. Excel spreadsheets look like they come from a different planet to me. And knowing you've got to come up with a business model. And so, you know, fortunately, Founders Factory had some really good people there, and there's some freelancers, you know, hired. Because, you know, you've got to come up with a business model to go out there and fundraise. And I have to say, of all the things, you know, I had to do, fundraising was the most onerous. It was the event in the decathlon that I thought, oh, geez, you know, you look around and say, can I pass this javelin to somebody else?
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, you're going up against really hard-nosed, savvy investors who do this day in, day out, know what they're looking for, and speak a different language. You know, it's really different to talking to TV commissioners or other journalists. But in the end, it came down to, I had to tell our story.
Right.
I had to tell our story. So I made a video explaining what we do. You know, I made a sort of mini documentary, a short film.
Wow.
I was like, I'll tell you how I make stories, and here we are. Here I am. Here's our products. Here's our scientists. So you play to your strengths, and through tenacity and people kind of grasping that this is, as you said, a whopping market. And if you've got something new and something different and something that has legs and something that could ultimately transfer from the UK to the US, then it's actually an exciting business. And we got there, and with a little bit of help from you guys.
Yeah. So what was the fundraising process like for you? How did that timeline match up with the product launch? And in general, you know, what was it like using Vevolution's investment marketplace? What did you like about it?
Yeah. So I raised 12 million. I raised 12 million on Vevolution. That was mainly in cash.
Seed round.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. That's in my cupboard still.
We'll be there soon. We'll be there soon.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously it took much longer than I thought. Again, the naivety of, you think, well, you know, I'll play my video and everyone's just going to write a check. We were being so fastidious about the product and the ingredients and the formulations and the packaging and the kind of ethical underpinning of it, that it obviously took longer than we thought, you know, which meant that I was going out to fundraise when we were pre-product. And that's a pretty hard sell when you're asking someone for money and you can't even show them a product yet. So you're selling them a dream, a vision. So that was trickier. We sort of did it in two tranches, and the first tranche was pre-product, and the second tranche, we actually had a product, and it was so much easier to say to someone, look, actually, you know, here's our jar. It doesn't look beautiful. Here's our lovely packaging, and just something that people can feel and get a sense of, and it feels premium, and it looks beautiful, and every, you know, it's got sort of embossed matte black writing on gloss, and it's a kind of real quality to it, and that feel helps a lot. So that was tricky. Quite early on, though, one of the funds who politely told us to sling our hook because we were too soon. I mean, that's the other thing. You realize there are so many time wasters there. People take up huge amounts of your time and energy who have no intention of investing because you're at the wrong stage for them.
Yeah.
But they still, I don't know why, they just can't, you know, maybe they think, well, who knows, but one of them said, thank you, come back when you need, essentially come back at the next round. But in the meantime, you should check out Vevolution. Mm-hmm. And I did. And immediately it chimed with our values that, you know, we are about the kind of awe and power and majesty of nature being harnessed to help our daily lives. And we think plants are pretty amazing. And how do we, you know, in some ways we're trying to use science to make plants even more amazing. And it was great to have this community there of people who were A, ethically aligned, but B, some smart business cookies out there. So we put up our pitch, spoke to a few people, got some really good feedback, and met a really cool Australian, Dave Murphy, who has a sort of advertising marketing background and really at the top of his game down under. And he brought on board a friend, a sort of partner there, Matt Knapp, who is has been a senior guy at Dollar Shave Club. Lovely guys. But funny enough, I just fired them off an email this morning saying, you know, we're just redoing our website at the moment. Can I get your thoughts on whether, you know, we're hitting the right D2C buttons? Can you check our messaging? So, you know, it wasn't just around shaking them out for the cash, but having people who are able to kind of bring value around the sort of marketing, the advertising, and the D2C. So it's great. It's been great. It's that sweet spot. It's people who share the same passion and worldview, but aren't just kind of there hugging trees in the morning and snorting quinoa, but are actually kind of can add value to your business. And, you know, what I discovered is that if you don't have enough money in the bank, then you, however good your intentions, you die a death. So you want people who can really help you thrive as a business. It seems that that's your community, our community.
It sounds like you found a couple of great people who really have some expertise to give you the right feedback and to help you grow and to give you that sounding board. And I think that can be difficult for entrepreneurs and the startups when they find people and they just write checks, right?
Yeah,
it's hard to do that alone.
Or even worse, there were people we spent so much time with who they don't quite get the stage of business that you're right at, where you want people who are supportive but not overbearing. You know, we found some people who were just frankly alpha male assholes.
They don't want they don't trust you to just run and grow things and grow through the challenges.
They want to micromanage you as though they're the big swinging dicks. They've done this. They've made their money. Let me tell you how it is. And they're not even in your sector. But you, I guess what you want investors who you like, you know, who aren't douches, who are decent people, who understand the journey that, you know, and the stresses of being a startup, who see your potential, who are there to support you and offer their wisdom, who you can turn to, who you can say if things aren't going well to without thinking, oh my God, what they're going to say.
Right.
I met quite a few people out there. You know, I guess there's a personality type that makes a fortune by being a bit sociopathic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I don't think they're on here though.
We just have a few minutes for a few more questions, but yeah, I really do believe that the investors, subscribers, the investors on Vevolution they really are mission driven. They really do have a lot of skills and different backgrounds. So I'm glad that you found some success there.
Yeah.
Now that you've completed the raise, you've launched the product. Congrats.
Thanks.
What are some of the next steps? What are some of the goals and things that we can expect of Karmacist in 2022?
We've launched relatively recently. Already we've had great press. We've been in the Times, Vogue, Forbes, working with some cool influencers here, really sort of holding our market fit. But I know we're going to have to do another raise. I don't know, let's say 6 months for argument's sake. And we really want to get this over to the States. You know, already we've got a waiting list with hundreds of people on who've just got in touch saying, when are you launching over here or over there where you are? We think that's the natural home. You know, our scientists are Harvard and Stanford. The US is a much more sophisticated supplements market. 3/4 of people take a pill a day. We could extend Karmacist across different ranges. It feels like a very versatile brand, you know, always driven by, you know, scientific excellence. So I guess we are already, I'm just sort of thinking, you know, who can get us to the States? Is there a sort of smart partner we can team up with, someone who already has a footprint in the States, who knows how it works, who has market access, maybe already has a bigger brand we can team up with, or who has the kind of know-how and capital to take us there? So, you know, we're demonstrating market fit here. with a view to doing another fundraise. But I just really, I think getting to the States is where these boys should be, or girls.
Well, I'm excited. I need to be on the list as well.
So yes, to you know, to the community, like, we're just really open to like partnerships and collaboration and expertise. And if, you know, if people are intrigued by what we're doing, the mission, then let's have a conversation so I can actually call you back from a yacht and get out there and do some good. You know, it's, you know, we all want to make money, but I think we're all here because we ultimately want to try and leave the world in a little bit of a better place. And, you know, whether that's through helping people's physical or mental health or promoting a lifestyle that feels kind of natural and pure.
Last question for you.
Yes, Eric.
Do you have one tip or a tip or two that you have for aspiring entrepreneurs or startups who are sort of just starting?
Don't do it on your own. Start with a co-founder from the beginning who has complementary skills to you. Ideally, one's business-minded, the other's creative or whatever the other skill is. Someone who loves a spreadsheet, someone who lives for Excel. And I think sort of more than anything, do a product that you believe in and care about and you think is going to make a difference to the world, because there are so many challenges, there are so many unexpected pitfalls, hurdles to jump, punches to the face, late nights, lost weekends, stress levels that demand that you guzzle your own relax pills. That what carries you through that is the belief in what you're doing. And if it was just for the sake of it, you would, like, I'm sure there are easier ways to make a living. Have a belief. In our case, you know, we believe in, I put myself in the royal we. We believe in karma system, what it stands for, and the brilliant scientists. And it's that passion that gets you through the night, gets you up in the morning, hopefully drives you forward to make a real hit of the business.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I think that those long nights are hard, but they're a lot easier when you believe a little, you know, at least a little bit or a lot about what you're doing. So it was really great to speak to you, Tim. Thank you for sharing the story about Karmacist here in the Plant-Based Business Podcast. We're excited that you're a part of the Vivolution community, and best of luck to you the rest of this year.
Thanks for being here. No, I mean, having you in the community around has been a massive support. So kudos to what you guys are doing. It's been a brilliant asset. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Tim. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Hello, Eric here, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Vivolution. We're building the world's leading plant-based and cell-ag community and marketplace. Head on over to www.vivolution.com to join our marketplace of investors and startups building solutions for a brighter future. In 2021, more than 25 startups secured partial or full round funding on Vivolution. And if you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. And please consider sharing it on your preferred social media channels. It really helps more people discover the positive stories we're sharing from around the world. Please give us a shout and tag us when you tell others about the podcast. You can find us on all social media channels at Vivolution. And you can email us at hello@vivolution.com if you want to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners. As always, thank you to Bridie Allison Child, who edits the podcast, and all of our guests and you, our listeners, for supporting the show. See you next time.